everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. And if you're listening live today, this is December 13th, 2019. Don't be superstitious for Friday the 13th. It can be your lucky day. And for today's show, my guest is Susan Dugan. And actually, I did catch up with Susan a few days ago. She's been traveling, and of course, she does some teaching in Denver, etc. So we had agreed that we would pre-record an interview with Susan for this particular show. So that's what happened. I caught up with her a day or two ago, and we did have a really great conversation on a topic that she had suggested. She wanted to go to the ACIM text, Chapter 15, Section 10, which is the time of rebirth, because this does have somewhat of a Christmas theme. And so she wanted to talk about that today. So that's what we're talking about. So as we are listening to this recording, and it is a recording, you know, that we did a couple of days ago between Susan and myself, as you're listening to that today, I hope that you will join me, or at least I invite you to join me over in our private group over on Facebook. And the way you get there is to go to the 12radio.com website. You look at the left side of the page, and you're going to see that navigation bar. And so choose chat, and when you click on it, you'll be automatically redirected over to Facebook, where you can just join us, and you can ask a question, or you can make a comment, that sort of thing. So I always like to see you over there if you want to participate in that way. But otherwise, also, if you're a course student, you might want to get out your textbook. We are going to chapter 15, and or you can just listen along. You know, hopefully you will get something out of this conversation that will inspire your life or provoke your life or just make you think a little bit. So as way of introduction, I would also say many of you know Susan Dugan because she has been on the show many, many times. She is a teacher here in Denver. She also is a freelance writer, and she's the author of three books: Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness, Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want, and Forgiveness, the Key to Happiness. Now, personally, I love all three of these books. They don't have funny titles, but I can tell you, they're very funny books. And it's just because Susan has a sense of humor, and she is very authentic, and she writes in these books many essays of her journey working with A Course in Miracles, and specifically with forgiveness. So I would highly encourage you to pick up those books if you've never taken a look at them. So sit back, get your coffee, tea, whatever makes you feel comfortable, and let's listen to this conversation between Susan Dugan and myself as we are talking about A Course in Miracles, and specifically the text, Chapter 15, Section 10, The Time of Rebirth. Welcome, Susan. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, and thanks a lot, as always, for a recommendation of what we're going to talk about today or something based on our discussion. I think anything that can be somewhat seasonal is probably helpful, and this one certainly is.
Yes, yes. Well, all of Chapter 15, actually, is sort of Christmas-themed. So so the section we'll be looking at is the time of rebirth. And in Chapter 15, and that, that is, it's a very Christmas-themed section.
Uh-huh. And actually, I can never go to Chapter 15 without making this comment, though. My favorite line in the entire course is the first sentence in Chapter 15.
Really?
Yes, because I remember the first time I heard it. It says, "Can you imagine what it means to have no cares, no worries, no anxieties, but merely to be perfectly calm and quiet all the time. Yet that is what time is for, to learn that and nothing more."
Wow. Yeah. Because it's really, the chapter is about the holy instant, right?
Yes. Yes.
And that is the holy instant is outside of all the noise of the world. It's in that quiet present where, you know, we accept the atonement for ourselves, right? As the Course says, we return to our innocent awareness that that Jesus holds for us of our union with God.
Yes, and I just remember when I read that, I know that we're not supposed to get hooked on the words. Right. I try not to get hooked on the words. But I remember the feeling that I had when I read that. And I said to myself, no, I can't imagine, but I really, really want to.
Mm-hmm. Well,
what does it feel like to have no cares, no worries, no anxieties, and to be perfectly calm and quiet? Right. What does that feel like? I mean, it was just palpable to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's what a promise. We say we want it, but, you know, we don't. We're really afraid of it too,
right?
Yes. And so, but you know, we can, I mean, the practice of forgiveness takes us there into the holy instant anytime that we're willing to change our mind, change our teacher and see and, you know, experience whatever seems to be going on, as Jesus does, to look beyond the devastation of the ego thought system and return to that quiet center.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it's always calm and peaceful and isn't taken in by the lies of the ego that we have fed the ego and then believed.
Right, to be above the battleground.
Right, exactly.
It's just like
imagery, yep.
Yeah, I feel like I can reach out with my hand, but I can't quite get there.
Yeah.
You know, that's how, at least that's what it feels like a lot of the time.
Right. Well, but it's in the willingness to reach out our hand, you know, to say, I mean, that's really the kind of the representation of the idea that there has to be another way, you know, that it's in our willingness to recognize that we're wrong and to, you know, drop the ego's hand, the inner teacher of specialness, of separation, of individuality, drop that hand and recognize that that's really what's hurting us. That's the real cause, and take Jesus's hand instead and ask to, you know, to see things differently, to see the situation differently. And that willingness will always result, maybe not immediately, but in a return to peace.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going, our comfort isn't in, you know, there's no other hand that will comfort us.
Right. Well, and you and I had been talking about, you know, some of the things I had been studying and reading recently. Well, another thing other than the huge gap that I was referring to, the other thing that keeps kind of coming back into my consciousness is, you know, and sometimes the Course comes right out and says it, and that is, if you could only get the connection between your thought behavior and what the demonstration is, what the result is. You want to think that you're a victim and this happens at random, but it doesn't. And the closer you can get to understanding the connection between those two things, can you get that your behavior, your choice for separation, your choice for individuality, your choice for fear leads directly to this result? Because, and I feel that, we've got this huge gap. We want to think that somehow there's something in between, and that in between partially is some other person is doing this to me.
Right, exactly. We're always making a false connection.
Right.
what we're experiencing, which is, you know, some sort of reaction, right, to
mm-hmm.
what seems to be happening outside of us. And we're making a connection that's what the cause of my upset is, my, you know, anger, my anxiety, my fear, if it's our body, my sickness, whatever. But really the connection that we're making is false, because it has nothing, it's not true that anything outside my mind can take my peace or wellness away, you know?
Right.
Really, it's really all being done at the level of the mind. We're just, you know, this is all circulating within the one decision-making mind, the one, you know, child of God that believed it was separate from God. And, you know, we have a choice. We can withdraw that projection by saying, you know, I'm wrong about this. Maybe I'm not upset for the reason I think. Because if I could see peace instead of this, peace must be there. And that's enough to really open the door to Jesus's awareness, you know, and Jesus is that symbol of the one loving child of God in our mind that is still connected, seamlessly with God, with our source. You know, nothing ever really broke that connection.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's in our willingness to, as long as we believe we're bodies and we believe we're here, and we all do, you know, I mean, it seems right. very real, doesn't it? And so our lives become the new purpose of our lives become this classroom of forgiveness in which we monitor our reactions all the time. We pay attention to what we're feeling and where we're pointing a finger for us to as the cause, you know, what we're blaming for our reactions. And then, you know, the practice is to say, wait a minute, the Course is telling me that can't be correct. And so, you know, I need to change my mind. I won't find peace in that direction. Even the desire to get rid of the guilt that, you know, is going on with, must be going on within me, it's not going to work, because all it does is nourish that guilt. It keeps me away from taking it back to the real cause in the mind and changing my mind. And so, you know, we learned through this practice that it's in our best interest to choose again, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, another thing that sometimes it does dawn on my mind is that what we're doing takes so much more energy than just accepting the truth.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of energy to create this whole illusion and keep it in place.
Right. The defense aspect.
Yes.
We're defending it all the time, right?
And, all the time.
Yeah. And I mean, everybody's doing this. We know from, you know, watching our political theater, maybe is a really, you know, almost a cartoonish version at times of how that operates, but it operates, you know, just as robustly, if we're honest with ourselves, in our personal relationships. And, you know, we are about defending ourselves, and we're all doing it, and we're all trying to, you know, position ourselves as the relatively less guilty one in the relationship. And, you know, all to try to you know, position ourselves in a better light with God, which we believe, you know, in the story we've told ourselves, is watching us intently, waiting for us to screw up again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And God doesn't know anything about it because nothing really happened. So so it is, you know, very much, as always, the Course, the center, the core of the Course is the practice of forgiveness. And that's what will, you know, that's what will heal our mind. We don't heal our mind ourselves. We can't will it into healed. We have to withdraw the barriers that we've made to our awareness of love's presence, love's enduring presence in our mind. And the way that we do that is through this practice of forgiveness. And, you know, this section, the time of rebirth, which is section 10 in chapter 15, it talks a lot about this, and Jesus, as always, is getting us to use our lives, the seeming content of our lives, as a curriculum. And chapter 15 is really, you know, centered on the season of Christmas, because in our culture, especially, the season of Christmas is where, you know, so I mean, it's kind of accelerated a crash course in and specialness, right? I mean, so much of ourselves into this season of trying to prove that we can make our relationships work, and trying to prove that the childhood that we're all nostalgic for, this like imaginary great childhood that we had, or the horrible or all that we lacked in childhood and we're trying to compensate for by giving to get, you know, by trying to acquire all these gifts and somehow, you know, manipulate others into you know, more greater approval of us and to position ourselves, you know, to try to curate our lives so that they you know, they, as if we could prove to ourselves that they work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody's doing this game and this dance and you know, and it's a tough one. I mean, we're dropping lots and lots and lots of resources and money into it that often leave us really even more sort of feeling lacking afterwards, and it never really works. I mean, we can't buy love, we can't give to get, you know? I mean, we really can't manipulate others because everybody's doing the same thing, and all it does is feed the lack that we have. So the whole idea of this section and this chapter is to change the purpose of our relationships, which is really the whole idea of the course throughout, and how, you know, how we can use the special relationship, which was meant to keep us, you know, to keep us fascinated and rooted in the dream, as a way to return, to awaken from the dream by giving it a different purpose, as a classroom of forgiveness. And you know, that means really like beginning to see that the way I'm using you to try to get my needs met all the time and is not loving, and you know, the way I'm trying to manipulate others to make myself feel better and is not really loving, and it's not bringing me the results that I want. And so, I mean, if we can just start with that idea that this is not working for me, and you know, it's not bringing me what I really want. And we don't even have to, you know, immediately go to the idea that the person who seems to be giving us problems or not meeting our needs or withholding love from us, or, you know, whatever, however it's portraying itself seemingly in my dream, we don't even have to really say that we want to, you know, want to forgive the other person. We just have to realize that what we're doing is causing us pain, you
know? Right. And close that gap. Understand what I'm doing is causing me pain.
It's not, you know, there's something really wrong with what I'm doing. It doesn't feel good. There has to be a better way. And so Jesus in this section is really encouraging us to use this accelerated classroom, this season, you know, that seems really kind of trying, in which we're really sort of, you know, all of the ego thought system is kind of heightened, all that neediness and all of that, you know, jockeying for to be the less guilty one and the more giving, portray ourselves as the more giving one, and somehow, you know, somehow get our lives to look better and all of the things that we do. To use those experiences that we have as a way to actually accelerate the healing process of our mind. You know, that's where this can be beautiful. And to enter into the only real relationship that will heal our mind about all of our relationships, and that's our relationship with Jesus. And, you know, so we can use the mythology of this baby, this innocent child being born into the world to save us. You know, we can begin to look at that differently as, you know, allowing the Christ within my mind to be born again, you know, to have a rebirth in my commitment to awakening through forgiveness, through drawing closer to Jesus, through, you know, withdrawing my projections on my brother, seeing that it's that, you know, no one outside my mind can take my peace away, and seeing how we're all the same frightened child that keeps trying to make this dream work and it never does. And everybody's feeling, you know, running around desperate here to try to have a nice Christmas, right?
Right.
In the dream. But, you know, the Christmas, the union, the redemption is in the mind, and the redemption really is for something that never really needed redeeming in the first place. And that is, you know, we didn't really separate from God. So there is no real guilt required over something that didn't happen. But, you know, we learn that again through this practice, and over time, it seems to be a process because we're really afraid of going to it directly. You know, it's become in our story, we believe the mind is now the place of punishment for something that's real, and instead it's really the place of you know, comfort and joy.
Right.
So I just wanted to read this a little bit here that kind of, you know, opens us to that idea. And
okay.
This is in the time of rebirth, in the middle of paragraph one. And he says, "This is the season when you would celebrate my birth into the world, yet you know not how to do it. Let the Holy Spirit teach you, and let me celebrate your birth through him. The only gift I can accept of you is the gift I gave to you. So the gift of union, you know, of the memory of wholeness. Release me as I choose your own release. The time of Christ we celebrate together, for it has no meaning if we are apart. And the time of Christ is really that remembrance of our innocence. You know, the face of Christ is the symbol in the course of our innocence. So, you know, Jesus is saying, you know, release your brother. I mean, this chapter culminates in a prayer that urges us to release our brother, you know, and release ourselves through our relationships. And Jesus is saying, you know, what you are accusing your brother of, you're accusing me of, because I'm apart. I'm the symbol of the God that you believe you wronged and is angry at you, you know. And that's why you keep acting this out in your relationships. So to release our brother, we have to go to the part of our mind that knows that we all deserve that release, or it won't work. We can't forgive something real when it isn't real.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's really about trying to use this time, this Christmas time, differently. And I might read a little bit more of that. He goes on to say, the holy instant is truly the time of Christ. And the holy instant is that moment, you know, outside the dream, when we take Jesus's hand and we do share, we shift to that awareness, away from our awareness as the personal self, to seeing our sameness, to seeing that, you know, the person, I'm wrong about where I'm attributing the, you know, thinking that you're the reason that I can't love myself or be peaceful or happy. In that moment, I also see that we're the same, you know. You're doing the same thing I am, fighting the same hard battle of trying to prove that you exist apart from God, but it's not your fault. And so we're both the same frightened child trying to find our way home. And we have that sort of instant, that sounds very heady, but all of that kind of comes to us in that moment, which the Course calls the holy instant of release and relief, in which we know we're loved. We know mm-hmm. we're all loved. We know no one's guilty here. And, you know, there's just this huge sigh of relief that I was wrong about myself, you know, which is what everybody here is desperate to learn. You know, please tell me this is not all I am, you know.
Right.
So the holy instant is truly the time of Christ, for in this liberating instant, no guilt is laid upon the Son of God. We withdraw the guilt, you know, and we don't even have to withdraw it. We just have to say, I'm wrong about it, and it's withdrawn for us because it never really was anywhere, you know. So in this liberating instant, no guilt is laid upon the Son of God, and his unlimited power is thus restored to him, to the decision-making mind. We see that we were just wrong. It was just a bad choice. It wasn't a sin. What other gift can you offer me, Jesus is saying, when only this I choose to offer you? And to see me is to see me in everyone and offer everyone the gift you offer me. Again, that sense of our sameness returns, and we see, oh, you know, we're all doing the same thing, and we're all wrong, and it's all okay. You know, we're all really loved and loving and forgiving and forgiven. And to see me is to see me in everyone and offer everyone the gift you offer me. I am as incapable of receiving sacrifice as God is. And every sacrifice you ask of yourself, you ask of me. And sacrifice is always what we're trying to do in our, you know, it's what we think we did to God, that we sacrificed God's love to purchase individuality. And now in our relationships, to try to exonerate ourselves, we believe we have to atone for that by sacrificing, you know, giving to get again, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I give enough, then I can purchase love back from someone else, another body, and that never happens, does it? It doesn't work.
Right.
They're feeling the same lack that we are by believing in this thought system. So, you know, God doesn't demand sacrifice for something that never happened. Love is intact. Love is, you know, is still within us all. We're still within love. Learn now that sacrifice of any kind is nothing but a limitation imposed on giving. And it was the limitation that we imposed on, you know, the one child of God, one mind of the child of God imposed on itself by believing that it could limit itself to a body, you know, and that was a crime that deserves punishment, and we have to earn back the love, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by this limitation, you have limited acceptance of the gift I offer you. So, you know, because we're so entrenched in the ego thought system, we've forgotten that, you know, the gifts of God are with us still, you know, and within us, and have never been taken away, could never be taken away.
Right. And in paragraph 4, can we jump to paragraph 4? Is there anything in paragraph 3 that you wanted to make sure we covered?
Nope.
Okay, because here's one of the ideas in 4 I just think is so important. It is in your power to make this season holy, for it is in your power to make the time of Christ be now. It is possible to do this all at once because there is but one shift in perception that is necessary, for you made but one mistake. It seems like many, but it is all the same. For though the ego takes many forms, it is always the same idea. What is not love is always fear and nothing else.
Right.
And I guess the reason that jumped out to me when I was reading this before is because, once again, I love to get distracted. I love to think it's 10 different things. I love to think it's, my mom, my sister, my postman, my whatever. And no, it's not. I made one mistake.
Right.
Believing that it was even possible to run away from home. Believing that it's possible to be separated. And it's not an overwhelming thing to remember that one mistake.
Right, exactly. Well, and really just to see that, you know, there's one problem, one solution. Forgiveness is the answer to all problems.
Right.
So because it's just one problem at the root of the cause, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't really matter what the form is. And that's, you know, that's the idea in the course, that there's no hierarchy of illusions. An illusion is an illusion is an illusion. All of them are made as defenses against the truth. Mm-hmm. You know, made up by the one mind as defenses against the truth to keep us mindless.
Right.
Searching for answers where they don't exist. And so, you know, the practice is always the same, you know, whenever we're reacting to whatever we were reacting to, the practice is to say, wait a minute, you know, I must be wrong. I can't be upset for the reason I think. It can't really be about this person, you know, my mom, my child, my boss, my body, you know, what's happening in my own body, what's happening to the body of a loved one. It can't really be about that, even though that's what it seems to be about. Because it's always the choice, you know, for guilt in the mind that demands punishment. And you know, that's what we're acting out, is that punishment is deserved. The question is only who's going to catch the worst of it, you know, and we're trying to make the other guy the bad guy. Or to prove ourselves as victims, right, in some way, shape, or form. So, you know, that whatever's happening to me is a personal attack. And really, it has nothing at all to do with me. It's just everybody's dreaming a dream of separation, and they're all dreaming it for the same reason, to prove that they exist, but it's not their fault.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Well, and what you just said, too, that was something I think, I'm trying to remember what lesson it was in, but really kind of hit me, too, is that, you know, we've talked before that sometimes I have a really hard time identifying with the original guilt. You know, mm-hmm. separating from God. You kind of throw that in my face and my eyes glaze over. But when I was reading it in this particular lesson and realizing all the many, many ways that I feel guilty.
Yes.
And, you know, even if it, like last week, I found myself getting into a pattern that I feel like is an age-old pattern for me. And I thought, really? Are you coming up again? But, you know, I really felt like this time I could look at it a little bit fresher and say, don't you realize this is what you do when you feel guilty? This is, you have to find some way to prove how deficient you are. Mm-hmm. And in the particular lesson that I was looking at that point, one of the things that Ken Wapnick was saying was something equivalent to, you know, all you people, well, and I'm always putting words in his mouth, but basically you think you're planning, you think you're taking care of things, you're organizing, you're planning for the future. All you're doing is avoiding what you think is the inevitable punishment that you deserve.
Right.
And, you know, I thought about that, and I thought how true that is. I can really see that in certain things in my life, that I'm not being spontaneous. I'm just trying to avoid what I think, you know, it's like when the other shoe is going to drop kind of phenomena.
Right.
And I thought, how funny is that? We think we're all planning, and all we're really doing is avoiding something that we think we, you know, punishment that we deserve for something we did in the past.
Right, and anything, and what we react to is anything that reminds us of the punishment we deserve.
Right.
So when someone attacks us, seems to attack us or criticize us, or you know, or something shows up in our bodies or whatever, we, you know, or something happens to a loved one, and we feel victimized. There's the punishment, right?
It yes.
reminds us of oh, you know, I had that coming.
Yeah.
I mean, I know from one of my big issues is if anybody criticizes me, I just crumble, you know? I mean, I just sort of automatically feel like I had it coming, you know? But I think that we all are really kind of like that. We may have different ways it triggers us, but we're all, you know, guilt is another way of looking at guilt is self-hatred. It's we hate ourselves because of what we think we did to God. And so, you know, when we're reminded of the guilt, you know, we don't even have to have actually done something. You know, we see a police car on the road, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, down a few cars down.
Yeah.
And we're immediately like, do I have a taillight out? Do I, you know, we're immediately like, right. We're going to get pulled over, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so that, I mean, that's just a small example, but it's everywhere. We feel, we really believe that we, you know, that we have punishment coming. And I've really become very aware in myself of how kind of almost transparently that plays out everywhere. You know?
Yes. Yes.
Once we start paying attention to this, we see, oh my God, you know, I'm doing this all the time.
Right. And of course, I do hear myself starting to go, well, I can't believe this is coming up again, blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
blah, blah, blah. And
yeah.
then I go, wait a minute, because that's it. I feel I deserve it.
Right.
I feel like, yeah, because you've never figured this out. And that's why it keeps coming, because you've never figured it out. Or you did this or you did that. And that, you know, this is never going to end. And all
right.
of a sudden I'm going, you're spinning out of control, CA.
Right.
Well, stop.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we think, oh, you know, I mean, I hear myself in those kinds of situations saying internally, well, you know, after all the work I've done, why is this still happening? You know, and stuff like that. So we're it's so easy for us to go back again to that trying to portray ourselves as victims, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not my responsibility. This is just happening to me. And of course, that's impossible. You know, what me? What? I mean, it's truly impossible. But, you know, in the level of where we do believe that we're bodies, you know, the practice is to kind of just catch ourselves and say, wait a minute, just as you did, you know, this is a choice I'm making right now. And I don't have to keep making the same choice, you know.
Right.
Free myself a lot sooner because I'm onto it. I'm, you know, I need to bust myself right now.
Yes. Well, and I was rereading chapter 30, which always kind of makes me laugh because that's where there are rules for decision.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, okay, you waited.
I'm in chapter 30 right now, so in my Tuesday night class.
Oh, yeah, and you waited to chapter 30 to tell us there's rules for decision?
Yeah.
I mean, I just laugh at that. But,
yeah.
you know, one of the things that I noted this time, and I'm sure I noted it before, but somehow it meant something different, and that is, you know, one of the first rules is decide what kind of day you want to have. Mm-hmm. And it says, but this isn't about that somebody's going to do exactly what you want them to do, that events are going to unfold. The day that you want to have happen is the day in which, in fact, Ken says it, that you wake up and you go, great, another day that I get to be in school with Jesus.
Right.
And when the minute something doesn't go right, the minute you're threatened to lose your peace of mind, you go back to that, okay, what was the kind of day that I wanted to have where I remembered who my teacher is?
That's right. And setting that intention in the morning, you
yes.
know, I mean, I do that every morning, you know, Jesus, please, you know, help me to look at everyone and everything with you. Help me to remember my purpose. You know, when I forget, help me to remember, you know.
Yes,
that is really our overriding purpose for everything. It should become the organizing principle of your days, you know?
Right, but it's not about today I will not have to wait in the grocery store line, or
no.
today I'm going to drive to such and such and it's only going to take me 10 minutes. That has nothing to do with the perfect day.
Right.
You
right.
know, or the purpose of your day.
Right, or today, you know, have this person behave a
yes.
little more sanely, right.
Have this person
get
not
off
be
my
insane.
Face.
Yeah. No, I guess it's more, today I will try to not be insane.
Get off my case. Right, exactly. To remember, you know, that we're in school. And that's very comforting, too, because, you know, if we're not graduates.
Yeah.
I mean, Ken used to say, you know, you're not, we're still talking kindergarten and elementary school. Later in his, toward the end of his life, he told us that we kind of needed to start graduating and becoming grad students at least. But you know, we're not done with the process. We still have guilt in the mind. We still have fear. But this is something that we can work with. And the process of remembering to bring it to Jesus, to admit that we're wrong, to own that part of it, that first step, you know, that realigns us and says, no, I'm responsible for this. That brings me back to the opening of seeing differently. And, you know, the guilt, the part of the undoing of the guilt that we're not even aware of being, you know, feeling that that we destroyed God, that's being undone for us through that part of our mind that knows that that's not real and that the guilt that we project on each other is not real either. So we don't have to worry about that. We don't have to believe that. We don't have to. We just have to take the little steps he says that he asks we take to him, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because there's in another place where I love the analogy of the ladder, you know, that once we took the idea seriously that we could separate, then the ego takes us down the ladder.
Right.
And at the bottom of the ladder is basically the material world and all these illusions that we get totally stuck in like quicksand. And we start studying the Course in Miracles, or we start choosing Jesus as our teacher, and we think we're up the ladder.
Right.
And the truth is, no, we're not. We're at the bottom of the ladder, but at least we know there's a ladder.
At least we're on the right ladder, right?
Right.
We're going in the right direction. We've realigned, yeah. Because,
yeah, but we're, you know, going, we're nowhere near the top of the ladder.
That's right. And honestly, it doesn't really, you know, again, this, I mean, Jesus uses a lot of linear sort of language because we can't really focus at all. But it's really not a linear process, and so
right.
it's not really helpful to try to judge your progress with this. You know, the question is right now, which teacher am I choosing? And I, you know, I could see peace instead of this. I could whatever's going on in my dream may suck, right?
Mm-hmm.
It does very often sucks in form, but I could experience it differently. Peacefully, I could go through it peacefully. I could go through it without all this anxiety and worry and torment, and you know, actually feeling a safety not of this world if I was willing to choose a different teacher, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be opening to the experience of the holy instant, which is that aha moment in which I, you know, there's no me in it, and full innocence dawns on the mind. You know, what does that mean to be really innocent? We don't know as bodies. When we're identified with the personal self, you know, that's beyond our awareness at all. But in the holy instant, we get to have a taste of that. And it's the practice of forgiveness that gives us those moments.
Yes.
You know?
The taste. Just the taste.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and more and more, once we've had those moments, you know, we know that is, there's an awareness, again, a peace that is not of this world, that we know we've been yearning for all our lives. And you know, our contrast between that and the way we're living most of the time, and you know, we become even more sensitized in this process of really paying attention and practicing forgiveness to how painful it is, you know, how fearful it is, how anxiety producing it is when I'm choosing to rely on my own, on the ego, on my own strength, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what strength? We're completely vulnerable, and it's terrifying. And I just find myself more and more to feel that, you know, that terror just makes me choose more quickly, because it's just excruciating in ways that I wasn't fully, you know, looking at earlier, because I couldn't even let it in, you know?
Right. Well, and you know, in the rules for decision, now that I think about it too, one of the things that kind of struck me this time was, you know, as he goes deeper and deeper into it, one of them is saying to yourself, I will make no decisions by myself. Right. But then later, as he starts, you know, taking it apart, he said, don't kid yourself. You're never making decisions by yourself.
Right.
You're always making a decision, either with the right mind, right, with Jesus, Holy Spirit, or with the ego.
That's
there,
right,
is nothing in between. So if you think you're out there doing it on your own and that somehow you can, then you're with the ego, because you're on one side or the other. You're never, ever really making a decision without one of those two teachers listening to that voice.
Right. We're always choosing. We're just not conscious of having chosen.
Right. Right.
I mean, really, the power that the Course is offering us is getting this to be a more conscious process, so that we become aware that we've chosen. You know, it's training us to recognize that we have chosen the ego when we're reacting to something externally as the problem. And then the practice is recognizing that, oh, well, I must have chosen the ego. I have another choice.
Right.
And so that, you know, it's really getting us, this is all about getting us back into the, you know, the decision-making mind, taking, when we choose the ego, Ken used to say, we become the ego, you know, we forget that we've chosen. But this is saying, you know, oh, well, I see the results of having chosen the ego, because this means I must have chosen the ego. And so now I can make a conscious choice, a different choice, that will bring me peace.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, and we're just, but so often we're just choosing between the illusions. We think we're making,
right,
that's another thing that somewhere I was reading that Ken said, you think you're making a significant change when you're just choosing between illusions.
Yes, that's right.
And it's like, oh, yeah, how many times have I done that?
Yes. So, you know, I was wondering as a closing, can I read, we didn't read from chapter or from paragraph 5 yet, did we?
No, we didn't. So yes, we've got a couple minutes left. So let's do that, and then you can make,
okay,
some announcements.
But since we're talking about choice, I thought it would be good to read this paragraph.
Okay.
It is not necessary to follow fear through all the circuitous routes by which it burrows underground and hides in darkness to emerge in forms quite different from what it is. And sometimes we get scared and think that the Course is demanding that sacrifice of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know, it's like, oh my God, do I have to go through every possible thing that a human being has, you know, has,
right,
to go through? And it's,
right,
not that at all. Yet it is necessary to examine each one, whatever's in your dream, anything you're reacting to, as long as you would retain the principle that governs all of them. When you are willing to regard them not as separate, but as different manifestations of the same idea and one you do not want, they go together. The idea is simply this: You believe it is possible to be host to the ego or hostage to God. This is the choice you think you have and the decision you believe that you must make. You see no other alternatives, for you cannot accept the fact that sacrifice gets nothing. And so, you know, it's really, again, that, you know, we believe that we can, in, you know, that the ego will somehow compensate for what we lack and you know, save us from the wrath of God somehow, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so host to the ego or hostage to God, because God is the punishment that we think we have coming. And really, there, you know, the whole idea, all of this is on no foundation whatsoever. It just all collapses once we're willing to make that choice to choose again.
Right.
This is nonsense. It's just hurting me. I'm hurting myself here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I know there's still a lot of good stuff in this particular chapter, but I realize we do need to wrap it up. So do you have any announcements you'd like to make?
You know, just that the Foundation for A Course in Miracles is, I think it's next week that there's a live seminar. They're doing live streaming now. Before they were doing classes that taught by Jeffrey Siebert that, you know, that you could get as a recording, which you still can do. But you also have the option to sign up for the live streaming. And then I think you have a couple weeks afterwards to review the recording as well. So, you know, check out the foundation. There's a lot of new information there and lots of always good sales on materials by Ken Wapnick and the staff. And so check out the streaming options on the website, because they've been even more improved.
Yes. And they're actually, I think they have a 20% off sale right now, a holiday sale.
They do, yes. So there's lots of good items that make great gifts.
Yes, they do. Although, quite truthfully, Susan, all of their stuff is so inexpensive.
Oh, I know.
You know, it's like, but still, it's really nice that they offer the holiday sale. It appeals to all of us. So, you know, I also would encourage everybody to go over to the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, and that's facim.org, because it's a wonderful resource, has lots of good stuff. So anything else, Susan, that you want to announce before we close today?
I think that's it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you, CA. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I love our conversations. You know that. So I look forward to seeing you in person and having some coffee sometime soon.
Yes.
So thank you very much. And I want to thank everybody for joining us today, for those of you who are listening and anybody who joined us in the chat room. And you can find Susan at her site, which is forayesinforgiveness.com. And that's forayesinforgiveness.com. And I will post that over in the chat room. And I'll also post a link to the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. So everybody, thank you so much for listening, and thanks for being here. Thanks for making A Course in Miracles part of your day. So until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about the holidays. Thank you.